Welcome. You're listening to C3 Church Hobart Online. We are so glad that you've joined us today for our sermon series titled Uncharted Territory. If this message impacts you in any way, please don't hesitate to contact us. We hope you enjoy this message.
I think those two runners are running, you know, up the hill, up through the uncharted territory and hitting those landings. I think that they're just representative of us as a church, and that we run together, and that landing those places of perspective is our community, they're the places that we're wanting to reach. And I really love doing the journey with everyone in this place, and I love running, I love pressing through to unknown places together, and I do feel super privileged to be able to get to share part of my story today. I'm like super nervous, like I've got so much appreciation for people to get up here week in, week out and preach the word. And I managed to scrape in a bit of practice public speaking this week. I don't know if you're aware, but at St. David's Cathedral, they're like reading the Bible, the whole Bible, end to end across a week. And I was there with a number of other people this week. I think it was Wednesday night. We got like the graveyard shift. It was like 11:30, and I was about 30 minutes away through, and seriously, I don't mind reading the Bible, but we're reading out of the Old Testament, and there's some super long words, and it wasn't them so much that I was scared about, you know, mispronouncing, but I thought, what happens if there's something funny, and I start to laugh. And seriously, I am 2 minutes out from finishing my second leg. I'm 28 minutes in. And I get towards the end of Judges 3. There's the very Reverend Richard Humphrey sitting in the front row and Pastor Sean sitting behind him. And it's a story of Ehud, who was tasked by God to take out King Eglon. And the Bible describes King Eglon as a very, very large man. And for whatever reason, at that moment, I found that a bit funny. And seriously, I got a bit of a grin on my face. And you know when you're talking and you're really straining the words out because you're going, think about birthday cake, don't laugh. And it went on. I thought, I'm going to get there. I've only got like six lines to go. And then it shows that, Ehud, he kind of came into the king's throne room. He paid his taxes and he did something sneaky and he grabbed a dagger and he jammed it into King Eglon. And in that moment, the way the Bible describes it, that he jammed it in so hard that the king's fat absolutely enveloped his arm and he lost his sword. At that moment, I lost it. The instructions I read before doing it, that if you mispronounce a word or you get lost, go back to the start of the chapter. I was cacking myself laughing, tears in my eyes, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to finish this. Seriously, it went for minutes, me laughing. And then I think Reverend Richard Humphreys knew what was going to come next, and he gets out of his seat, and he's like barracking for me to get to the end with his arm pumping like I'm finishing a grueling marathon. And no shadow of lie, what the Bible says, that the king's officials, who had no idea that the king had been killed at this stage, they came back to his throne room and the door was locked. And it says they feared entering in case the king was relieving himself. Safe to say, I did see through Hobart really proud that night. And we may not get invited back next year. This morning I want to share a bit of my story. There's parts of my story that I'm not going to share because they're probably more suited with a bunch of blokes sitting around a campfire, but I want to share a bit of my story today. I want to share a couple of key moments that have been really significant to me. And like so much of my life, you know, they have been moments of stepping into uncharted places. When I was first asked to share in this series and share a part of my story, I thought, my mind went racing to all the funny stories of being a kid and growing up and all the adventures that me and my mates had gone on. But as I reflected, I realised that God wanted me to share probably more about the quiet parts, the stillness in some moments where, you know, God did the biggest work in me. So I'm going to endeavour to, as best as I can, unpackage some of those moments for me. I also want to say thank you so much to this church, because there's no way I would be here today, like literally, if it wasn't for Pastor Lucas and Annie planning this church 21 years ago, if it wasn't for the young adults ministry that I was a part of initially, if it wasn't for all the people that had given into this place before I showed up, and equally all the people that I've done the journey with. So before I get underway, thank you so much for everything that everyone has done and invested into my life. Growing up, I lived with my mum. My mum's here today. Thank you so much, Mum, for coming. But I grew up with my mum, on a weekend, on a Friday night, I would come stay at my dad's house. He owned Prady's in North Hobart and had like a little unit upstairs. And Prady's and Friday nights kind of became a bit of a ground for adventure. I had quite a few mates that lived in the area, and kind of from, you know, bedtime on a Friday night through to the wee hours of Saturday morning, that's where we got up to most of our mischief. I'm cognizant of the fact that there's a few young people in the room today, so I'm just going to refrain from kind of mentioning what age I was when I started getting up to these things, but use your imagination and probably take a few numbers off. For me and four mates in particular, growing up, we were super close. We all had kind of similar family backgrounds. We all thought we were way more mature than what we were. We had way too much freedom, especially on those Friday nights. And it wasn't till, you know, growing up and looking back that I actually realised that. I thought I was really old when I was in like grade 7, but I came to know down the track that, you know, that wasn't the case. One of my best mates, and I'm not going to mention his name, like we were so tight growing up, and he was the best man at my wedding. You know, just this year he's you know, found himself in, you know, really tough space in life, and, you know, he's probably going to not have his freedom for probably another 10 or 15 years. And, you know, I realise all those silly things that we did as kids, it's a really slippery slope. Without changing your life and without getting God in your life, I've watched one of my best mates go through something that I just find so hard to you know, get my head around. And preparing for this message, it's kind of, you know, brought all that back. But I do want to tell you one particular story. This is the story of the night that me and a number of my other close mates, we went on a bit of an adventure for the first time. And it was a Friday night, staying at my mate's place, and I'll avoid the detail, but we did a bit of a Houdini trick, and we all found ourselves outside, parents asleep, and we went on a bit of a mission down to Salamanca. And seriously, seeing the city, seeing Salamanca as such a young person, man, my eyes were opened. Anyway, we got down to Salamanca and we had no idea what to do. We had no plan. We knew no one. We just found ourselves down there at this crazy hour. And we would have been really close to the Salamanca Bakehouse. That's Centuro's now, make awesome hot chocolates. But we were down there near the Salamanca Bakehouse and we saw this guy. He was a solid dude, wearing jeans, a black hoodie and a black baseball cap, and he just had this biggest grin on his face looking at us four young blokes. Must have been thinking, what on earth are you doing down here? Anyway, we wound up sitting down on this little round table outside the Salamanca Bakehouse, and this guy, whose name is Taz, and wouldn't surprise me if people in this room knew him, he's been such an awesome person for me and my life. We sat down and we talked for hours. And whilst I can't remember the detail of that conversation, I do remember the absolute laughter that we had. And we explained the story of how we came to be down there that night. And for the next 5 years, me and my mates, we would probably see Taz about once a month. So this was literally the first time we snuck out and did this. But for the next 5 years, we would see Taz so frequently. We knew where he was. We'd go down there. He ran security at the bakehouse, and we would have so many countless hot chocolates sitting down there. He would, you know, he was somewhat of a father figure to us. He used to kind of hear about what we got up to and used to speak into our lives. He would hold us accountable. He was certainly someone that we knew we could call on if things ever got bad. And I know in my life that happened. One of my mates had to call him one night where I got hit pretty hard from behind and I couldn't see anything. And the first person that I see is Taz there. He was just like a rock. He was just such a solid person in my life. And, you know, 21, 22 years of age, I invited him around for dinner. And I hadn't seen him for about a year at that point. And I started sharing with him about kind of everything that God had done in my life and about church. And I thought, I'm just going to share about Jesus with him. And ended up showing him a couple of Louis Giglio videos thinking, I've got it. He's going to walk away from here knowing Jesus. And he said to me, Stuart, I believe in God. And a whole lot of stuff made sense in that moment. The reason why I share that with you, like, I truly believe that God placed Taz into my life that first night, that very first night that we went out. And there's kind of two overarching things reflecting as an adult back on the days that I've learned. First one is, you can't judge a book by its cover. If I had gone home, you know, the next night and said to my mum, hey, met this guy Saturday night, me and the boys snuck out, blue jeans, black hoodie, baseball cap, sat down, bought us a hot chocolate, chatted for hours, what would my mum have thought? Seriously, she would have gone ballistic. But she would probably come, well, I know that she came to know many, many years down the track. I think in a hairdresser, she was chatting to someone and somehow it came out that that I knew Taz and that he had helped me out. And I think she came to know what a significant person that guy was in my life and how he kind of always had my back. The second thing that I learnt is there's only so far in life you can go by yourself. Only so far you can kind of step out of the boat without needing someone to be there by your side. You know, the Bible talks about in Matthew 14, the story of when Jesus was kind of out praying by himself and the disciples had gone out in a boat on the river. And Jesus did like this super cool party trick, walking out on the water towards them. Half the disciples freaked and said, is that a ghost? And Peter looked at Jesus and said, Jesus, if that's you, call me out onto the water. And Peter stepped out. And I can't imagine what that moment would be like where you step out into something so unknown and something that you think is going to support you is right there. And I don't know how long the Bible doesn't describe it in great detail, but he spent time walking on this uncharted place. But as soon as the wind kicked up, as soon as the waves started hitting his feet, he freaked out. Why? He'd never done that before. He had the faith and the confidence to step out, but all of a sudden he went from walking in this place that's probably just blowing his mind to drowning. The Bible literally said he was drowning. And the Bible says immediately Jesus grabbed his hand. And when I say there's only so far you can go in your life by yourself, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Having people in your life that can grab you when things go south. Having God in my life, I've experienced moments that I've been in utter chaos and boom, so reliable, always there. Our destiny is also tied up so much in other people. You know, Peter, at the start of his ministry, was called by God to go out and be fishers of men. Peter stuffed up so much along the way. He had a crazy life. Towards the end of Jesus' ministry, when he was on the cross, Peter was nowhere to be seen. He denied knowing Jesus three times. Yet Jesus, once he'd risen again, he'd met with two other groups, and then he came back to the Sea of Galilee. Same Jesus, same place, same Peter, same calling. It's just that this time, Peter was ready to step into his future. He went on to start the early church in the book of Acts, and he ended up dying for his faith. Young people, I was super young in these stories, and I just want to say something kind of specifically to young people for a moment. Whether you're young and embarking on something for the first time in your life, you're looking at something and you go, there's no way I could do that. There's no way I could be that person. Just step out and have a crack and go for it. Even if things don't go to plan, even if you think, that was a failure, God is going to use those moments to teach you and to grow you so that the next time you're faced with an opportunity that you can step through it. There's this quote that I absolutely love from an American author who died many, many years ago. Her name's Pearl S. Buck, and it says this, that young don't know enough to be prudent, and therefore they attempt the impossible and achieve it generation after generation. The young don't know enough to be prudent, therefore they attempt the impossible and achieve it generation after generation. Moving on a bit in my story, I want to share a bit about my salvation experience. 18 years of age was a big year in my life. I turned 18, did all the stuff that I used to do legally, which was absolutely awesome. I also bought my first house, bought a little two-bedroom unit in Lenner Valley, and I was doing really well at work. I worked at Target, Rondell Boutique, the retail store. I was a manager there, and I absolutely loved it. Worked big hours, worked with an amazing team of people, and I was literally having the time of my life. What wasn't I doing? I wasn't looking for God. I wasn't looking for anything to change because I thought life was brilliant. I worked with three people at Target, I worked with a lot more than three people at Target, but three people in particular that also happened to attend C3 Church or Christian City Church as it was back in the day. And one of these people was on the management team that I was on. And what that basically meant is we spent a whole lot of time together. And at the end of every day, we would go and do like the cash run together. And I'd often ask her, going, you know, what did you do on the weekend? Oh, I was at church. What are you doing tonight? Oh, going to a prayer meeting. What are you doing tomorrow night? Going to a young adult's night. I'm like, man, you go to church a whole lot. And this went on for months and months and months. And one night, I don't know why I said, I'm going to come to your church one day. And months later, it didn't happen straight away. She ended up saying, hey, we've got a young adult's night on tonight. It's a Friday. You should come along. And me and the two other people I work with, we're going to be there. And you should come along. So I thought, I will. So I went home that night, as I would on a Friday. And me and my mates, my Friday routine was finish work, go home, have a few drinks, go to a club, come home the next morning at 5, 6 a.m, sleep a lot, have a lot of food, go and repeat the process. So I was at home that night. I know I said I was going to church, but I kind of started that routine that I had a few drinks. And driving into the city, I said to my mates going, if these three people happen to be standing at La Bella Pizza, their work colleagues of mine, you've got to let me out of the car because I'm going to go to church. They burst into laughter, and one thought it was so funny that he said, well, I'm going to come too. Turns out that he didn't, and we were driving past, and sure enough, there the three were standing outside La Bella Pizza, so I jumped out of the car. And the first thing that grabbed my attention is we didn't walk up the street to the big sandstone building, which I now know is St. David's Cathedral. I seriously thought that was the only church in the city. We went up Liverpool Street and wound up at the Odeon Theatre. My experience that night, I met people my age. They were the most friendly people known to man. Like, every person I met, big smile on the face, introduced themselves, asking for my phone number. After I'd given out my phone number like three times, I started to change a digit because I thought, I'm going to get hammered by a whole lot of people I don't know. So I literally started changing up the digits. And we went upstairs. I don't know if you've been like at the old Odeon Theatre, there was like a mezzanine upstairs, and that's basically where the night was. And we had a mini church service. And I was standing there listening to this praise and worship music, thinking, oh my goodness, what have I done? I looked at the guy standing next to me. His name was Simon. He was one of the guys I knew. I said, why has everyone got their hands in the air? He goes, they're surrendering to God. He goes, you should do it too. I thought, I am not surrendering to God. I it was so foreign to me. And you know what? Now I'm one of those guys. But it was so foreign to me. Got towards the end of the night and I thought, in 10 minutes' time, I am going to be out of here. Like, I got through the night, 10 minutes, be nice and polite, say goodbye to everyone that's been so nice, say goodbye to my friends, and I was going to get straight on the phone and go down and catch up with my friends at ISO Bar. So the night had finished. There was a salvation altar call, you know, where the person that was preaching asked people to put up their hand if, you know, they wanted to receive Jesus. I didn't put up my hand. And this guy walked up to me. He was older than me. He was wearing a brown hoodie and he had a grin ear to ear. His name was Chris. Chris Richardson. Put your hand up if you know Chris. A lot of people knows Chris. So Chris came and introduced himself to me and we talked for a little bit. And before we wrapped up our conversation, Chris said, can I pray for you? Why not? I put my hands together like this because that's what I remember from school, and I remember him laughing, saying, you don't need to do that. What happened next is Chris placed his hand on my shoulder. He prayed. I have no idea what words came out of his mouth, but what transpired in that moment was me experiencing God in my life for the first time. I left there. I went clubbing 2 nights straight. Woke up Sunday morning, inconveniently going, I've got to figure out what on earth happened. And so I'm going to have to go to church. So I get up, jump in my car, I'm driving, passing the church in Lenna Valley. I may not be in a state to drive, knocked off the mirror on my car against another car. I wasn't a Christian at that point, so I kept persevering towards church. And I thought, I am going to figure out what on earth took place. And like, it seriously, it just freaked me out. And I kept on doing this. Week in, week out, for I don't know how many weeks or months. It was quite hard. I was very tired on a Sunday morning. So I would literally be asleep 5 minutes into a message and I would get woken up by the people I used to work with giggling, elbowing me. And I can't remember how long that went on for, but that was my early church experience. It was trying to figure out what on earth happened the night that Chris prayed for me. Fast forward to church together that year. I was still 18 at that stage, about to turn 19, and we went to a church together event. It was at the Dillon Entertainment Centre, and Pastor Phil Pringle, who oversees this movement, he was speaking that night. And he got through the message. I thought it was hilarious. I can't remember what he preached on, but I remember thinking, this guy is really neat. And he got to the end, and He put it out there. If anyone wants to receive God into their life, put up your hand. And I don't think I planned to put up my hand that night. Sitting in my seat, I kind of felt like time was standing still a little bit. And my heart was absolutely pounding. And I thought, if I put my hand up, everything's going to change. Everything's going to change. But in that moment, hand went up and I ended up going down. Phil prayed for me and Pastor Phil prayed for me and I'd given my life to God. And I was right. Everything did change that night. This is by far the most significant part of my life. You know, that period is so much change happened. Sorry, Shaz. Sorry, boys. But I cannot believe how much my life changed meeting Jesus. And a mate of mine, James, he sent me a message this morning. He said, on the other side of your obedience is someone else's destiny. I think referring to my message this morning. And that is so true. But I look at everything that everyone did prior to me, coming to church, coming to that young adults night, being prayed by Chris, going to the deck, giving my life to God, and I'm a product of the generations that went on before me that were so obedient to what God was calling on their lives. So again, I want to say thank you to everyone that wound up with me being there in that moment and getting God in my life. After I invited God into my life, things changed slowly. I would get weird phone calls from my mates who would be at my house doing weights, and they'd put on the stereo expecting to get a bit of Green Day. Instead, they'd get Nikki Fletcher bellowing out a praise and worship song, and they'd be like, what on earth is that? And they came to enjoy it and would sometimes listen to that sort of music when they did a workout. One day at church, kind of in my early years, Pastor Lucas called me out the front and he said, Stuart, you're going to get a promotion, but it's not going to be in your current job. And I thought, man, never had a prophecy over my life before. Didn't think anything of it. Didn't go looking for jobs. Someone said to me, where would you want to work? And I said, oh, Cadbury Schweppes. I said, I've got a mate that works there. And I said, it'd be brilliant. But no jobs ever came up, so I never bothered looking. Little did I know that there was a job that was up at that moment, but I wasn't looking for a job, so I didn't inquire about it. Working at Target, overheard someone speaking in another aisle saying, oh, you heard that such and such has left Cadbury's. And I'm like, what? That's amazing. So I end up calling my mate. He goes, yeah, we're looking for someone. And I put together a resume that night because applications were closing within like a few days. Resume was terrible. Didn't get an interview. Didn't even pass through the first sweep. My mate ended up saying to his boss, hey, I know this guy. I think he put in a resume. You should interview him. And they looked at the resume and said, oh, look, he's probably not the sort of person, but we'll do an interview anyway. And turned out that as soon as I got in front of him, got the job, and that was amazing. But, you know, having someone prophesy over me, it was like a new kind of uncharted territory that I'd never experienced, someone telling me something and then that actually coming to pass in my life. When I was 19, 20, I had a couple of houses and interest rates hit 10%. That was a really interesting time, and I ended up renting those two houses out and moving into a share house. And there I met a guy called Dave Cawthorn, who, so many people in this room may know. And Dave was an amazing, amazing guy. And, you know, he walked me through my early Christian years. He taught me how to pray, taught me how to read the Bible. We talked a lot about his journey, and he had overcome leukemia a couple of times, and I kind of met him after the second round of that. And he was such a special guy in my life. One day in May 2008, he walked into a room with all our housemates and said, boys, leukemia's come back. I've got 8 weeks to live. And devastated me. Absolutely cut me to the heart. I couldn't believe that my mate was about to embark on something that was... Yeah, short of a miracle, was going to take his life. And, to kind of describe how cool Dave was, that night I couldn't sleep. I'm walking through the corridors of my house at 2 a.m. and bump into Dave. He also couldn't sleep. And I said to him, Dave, can I pray for you? And I went to pray and I couldn't. And he turned around and ended up praying for me. And I just thought, isn't that like the testimony of this man, this amazing man? And I shed a tear this morning singing the song It Is Well With My Soul. That was his favourite song. And when he was sick, we would stand next together in church and he'd put my arm around me as we sing that song. And I just remember this guy was such a rock in my life. And the night he died, James Atkinson and I were praying down on the beach. And I remember the moment that he passed away. We didn't know it at that time. We didn't know it. And, found out the following morning that, he'd lost his life. And I'll never forget that man. Just another guy in this church that has shaped me to who I am today. 2008, it was a tough year. It was a tough year. Shaz and I, my wife Shaz, we planned to go on a date. We were friends for a long time, and we planned to go on a date. And the night of, the day of our first date, Sharon and her brothers Andrew and Luke lost their dad, and Beth, Sharon and Andrew and Luke's mum, She lost her husband, and that was meant to be our first date. And through a string of crazy events, I wound up being at the hospital that day, and I remember looking at Shaz and just gave her the biggest hug. I'm going to talk in big, deep breaths because that will be easier. Gave her the biggest hug that I could because I didn't know what to say. And I was driving Lucas and Annie home that night, and they said, "What are you gonna do?" I said, "Well, tonight was meant to be our first date. Like, I'm not gonna do anything. I'll let Sharon and her family grieve." And they said, "No, it's the worst thing that you can do." I said, "You need to be there by her side. You need to be her rock." And I got a phone call that night from Sharon's auntie, Wendy, and she invited me around to their place. They were having dinner, and you know, Shaz and I were together that night, and we've hardly left each other's side ever since. We got married about a year later, and we now have two beautiful kids. And God has been so good to us. But in amongst all the good times, there have been some really tough times. Uncharted territory is interesting like that. That not every journey is that crazy adventure that is exciting. The tough stuff. You know, one other thing in my life that was super tough, and that was when we lost our first kid. And I don't want to go into the detail around that, but how did God get me through the tough times? I remember sitting in a hospital room, when Shaz was having a surgery, and it's the third time I'd been there in about a month. And I remember talking to God, just saying, "Mate, I just want to slap the devil. Like, I seriously was like, bring it on. If I could find him, I would go for him." And I remember God in that moment speaking to me and telling me a story that I needed to hear. And it was you're not going to find it in the Bible. It's more of a revelation about stuff that's in the Bible, but it's about Jesus. And Jesus coming to earth, sent by God, his only son, to die for our sins. And from the very get-go, he's baptized, he's in the wilderness, the devil's having cracks at him. "Hey, if you're really the Son of God, turn that stone into bread because you've fasted for 40 days. If you're the Son of God, throw yourself off this temple and call the angels down to show us that you are that person." Took him up onto a hill, looking out over all the land, saying, "If you bow down before me, all of this will be yours." And Jesus must have just felt like, "Mate, I'll show you my God," and just doing something in that moment. But he had his eyes on what was important. All throughout his life, the Pharisees taunted him, trying to have a go at who he was claiming to be. Even up until the cross, the person that was hanging next to him saying, "If you are the Son of Man, get yourself down and get me down too." But what was Jesus' eyes on? His eyes were on us. His eyes were on everyone that's not in this room today. And Jesus had his... So the part that got me through that moment, the thing that pulled me out of feeling absolutely gutted and devastated about what had happened in my life in those weeks before, was the fact when God said, "I'll show you what my son did." And for 3 days he trudged through the narrow places of hell, and he kicked the devil's butt, and he took back the keys to hell and death, and he had authority over our lives. And that is the God that gets me through uncharted territory, the highs and the lows in my life. Ben, you are come back up. Man. One more point I want to communicate. In those moments, right, where you're in a room, you're in a situation you don't want to be in it, my head buzzes, so much noise. My head is telling me so many things, so loud, so loud. But as I mentioned at the start of my message, that you know, God has taken me and done a whole lot of crazy things in my life, but it's in the moments of quiet, of stillness, of solitude that God has done the most, and I've learnt the most about myself. And in that room, with my head buzzing, noise, can't understand, my heart was clear. And I felt God say, "Listen to your heart, because that's the voice of the shepherd." So as I wrap up this morning, and so I'm going to leave you with a parting gift. I would say, in those moments of uncharted territory, whether they're radical and amazing and crazy, or whether they're the toughest, most gut-wrenching moments that you've had to walk through, when your head is so noisy and so loud, find a moment of solitude and stillness and quiet to listen to what God is saying through your heart. If there's anyone in this place this morning that doesn't know Jesus, that doesn't know the person that I was talking about just then, and they want to invite God into your life, I would hate for this moment to miss and not have the opportunity to lead you in a prayer where I would help you invite Jesus into your life. So if I can just get everyone to close their eyes for a moment. If there's anyone here at all, maybe you're just like I was, you're sitting in your seat, your head's going mad, your heart's pounding, and you're going, oh, could today be the day that I invite God into my life? Could today be the day where everything changes? Then I would love for you to just put up your hand and say, yeah, that's me. I would love to invite God into my life. I'd like to say a prayer of salvation. So if that's you this morning, feel free just to pop up your hand and you can slip it down again. Amen. Amen.
Thank you for listening to C3 Church Hobart Online. If you have been impacted by this message, had an encounter with Christ, or would like us to pray for you, please contact us. To find out more about our church and to stay connected, go to c3hobart.org.au.